You know the story of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, those little pet turtles who, after stepping into a mysterious radioactive goo, became New York City crime fighters? Well, there is a real-life version of that, an army of mutant female marbled crayfish. I'm not making this up. They are taking over the waters across the world. Now, we can't confirm if these crayfish are fighting crime or teenagers, but they did arise from a strange aquarium accident where they were released into the wild. Scientists are baffled by how this has all happened. I see a movie here. A group of researchers sequenced the gene of the marbled crayfish to try to get a better understanding, and their findings were published this week in the journal Nature, Ecology, and Evolution. And my guest is one of the authors on that study, Wolfgang Stein, professor of neurophysiology, Illinois State University in Normal and crayfish genome research. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. What a great show so far.
Thank you. Well, you're part of it. And you have a great story to tell. Give us a little background, the origin of how the species of crayfish came to be.
Yeah, it's actually quite interesting. Like you said, we sequenced the genome of this parthenogenetic species, the marbled crayfish, and they reproduce asexually, basically. We don't really know exactly how it happened, but at the time, two slough crayfish, those are crayfish that live in Georgia and Florida, a couple of them mated, and something went wrong, and one of the daughters of these animals inherited an additional set of chromosomes, and that daughter then could no longer reproduce normally, but instead was able to generate live offspring without any males. And this is quite interesting, because that happened like 25, 30 years ago, so it's really the only species where we can actually account for when the species started. So this is a new species that really has only been in existence for like 30 years or so.
And in those 30 years, it has been multiplying around the world?
Yes, it's crazy, because we've been able to track those animals back to that one animal. And so all the crayfish that we have in existence now of that species stem from that one accident, that one animal that, you know, inherited those additional sets of chromosomes. And so by now they have spread all over the planet. We find stable populations in Japan, in Europe, in many countries, in Madagascar. And you can buy them in the U.S. as well in pet trade. There are no stable populations in the wild so far, but actually I wouldn't be surprised to find them.
Oh, so they're not living in the waters. They're living in people's aquariums.
They are living in people's aquariums or wherever you put them, and that's actually how they travel with pet trade. And people, you know, you get one of these animals and they reproduce. Within like 3 months, you have 200 offsprings, and, you know, people get tired of them, and the worst thing that they can do is they put them in a lake next to their house, and, you know, a year later, you have thousands of these animals.
In the lake?
In the lake. Yes.
Do they start attacking things in the lake, clean, you know?
Not that we are aware of, but they are out-competing the local crayfish species. And so eventually this will be a problem for conservation of the local species. And they spread really, really fast. And this was part of the study as well. In Madagascar, we tracked essentially since 2007 how much they spread. And just to give you an idea, when they were first discovered in Madagascar in 2007, they occupied a space of like half the size of Rhode Island. And by 2017, that's the size of Ohio now.
Wow. I'm just trying to soak that in. And
yeah, it's about a 100-fold increase in like area that they live in 10 years.
How do you know if you have one?
The easy way is actually you take it, you put it in a tank, and you wait a couple of months, and you'll have offspring. If there's no other animal in there, you can be sure that you have one. They have a certain, like when you look at them, the coloring, that's why it's called marbled crayfish. So that said, they are not very easy to differentiate from other species out there.
This is just, I'm just soaking this in. I know there's something called parthenogenesis, where animals reproduce asexually.
Yes.
Is this what's going on here?
Yes, that's exactly what's going on. The parthenogenesis, like you said, is just an expression for asexual reproduction. And there are other species that do that. So the interesting thing about this particular species is that we can now track it as this happens. We know, you know, 30 years ago this species came about, and now we can track how the genome of this animal actually changes. Wow. Because for most of the species that reproduce asexually, we know they're genetically diverse. This hasn't happened to these animals yet, so we are a bit baffled by this, actually.
I can tell. I know you call your lab the crab lab.
Yes.
Where you study all sorts of crustaceans. But you're a neurophysiologist. What are you trying to learn about this? And let me just let you answer as I give the ID. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Mm-hmm.
So I'm a neuroscientist, as you say, and my interest is in how drugs and medications affect the brain. And so it's well known that people respond quite differently to medication, but it's really not clear why this is the case. And so the underlying assumption is always that this is differences in genetics. And we now have the chance to test this because the genetics in these animals is really the same. It's identical. And so we can, you know, test how diverse the brain actually is if you're genetically identical.
Now, I know you have marbled crayfish in your lab. Do you keep them under lock and key? I mean, how do you...
Yes. Yes, we indeed do. We make sure that they don't get out. We don't want to cause an infestation in the local lakes here. So, yes, we have separate tanks that we pay well attention to, I guess.
I'm thinking of movies from the 1950s now where somebody from Hollywood's going to call you any minute.
You know, they're a good source of protein, so I guess one way of getting rid of them would be to, you know, eat them. So that would be a way.
How do they taste? I know you must have tried it. But.
No, I have not tried them. I have tried the crabs that we work with, but I have not tried the crayfish. But I suppose they would taste similar to other crayfish.
Now, some people call them crawfish in different parts of the
country. Yes. Southern parts, usually, I guess.
This is amazing. So, what have you learned about their neurology? I mean, their neurophysiology. Are they different from other crustaceans or crawfish?
They are, in terms of the neurons that they have, are very similar to other crustaceans, in particular to crabs and other crayfish. What we've seen so far is that they're really less diverse. So if you go from one animal to the next animal, it seems like they are more identical, which corresponds to the ideas that we have. And so theoretically, they should be more susceptible to interference. Like if I give them a certain drug or so, they should respond all the same.
You know, as an old Aquarius myself, I used to have a lot of fish tanks. You know, the Aquarius in me says, I'm going to go out and get one of these and put it in the tank and watch.
Yep. You know, in some areas of the world, they are banned now from pet trade. In most parts of Europe, they are banned. In some states in the U.S., they are banned. I think in Illinois, you can still buy them. I don't know about New York. But
you're not encouraging anybody to do this.
No, I would not do that. And, you know, if you do that, make sure that they are not getting out. Don't flush them down your toilet. You know, don't put them in a lake next door. It would really be a problem for conservation.
Yeah.
But there's another part to this that kind of fits also the theme of your today's show, which is our collaborators in Germany at the German Cancer Research Center. They're interested in tracking tumors in that population because for the same reasons, actually, that we work with these animals. Because if they're all clones, we can understand, you know, that opens a lot of doors for understanding how tumors come around in a population and they spread across populations.
So, what a great idea.
Yeah, it's really a neat species to work with, and we're all excited to have it.
So nature did this accidentally, and now you can make use of it.
Yes. Actually, since you mentioned nature did this, we are actually not sure whether it happened in a tank in, you know, someone's aquarium at home or whether it happened in the wild. We do know that the father and the mother were not closely related, so they might have come from, you know,
whoa,
I don't know, different lakes or so.
We don't know if any radioactivity was involved.
I highly doubt it.
All right, Dr. Stein, this is quite fascinating. Don't go out and get the crayfish.
Exactly.
Anybody. Wolfgang Stein, professor of neurophysiology at Illinois State University. Thank you for a very informative discussion.
Thank you very much.